Hello and welcome to the Hall of Fame Video Game Podcast, starring Matt Levy and Mike Staub. We love video games and have embarked on a journey to index the greatest video games of all time into our very own Hall of Fame. Here's the show. And hello, Mike. How are you?
Hey, Matt. How you doing?
I'm good. Because of our new recording schedule, I feel like I haven't sat down in this chair and talked in a while. How you been?
It's been good. Things have been crazy. That's a good thing. And I am excited to kind of rebound.
And
talk about some video games.
Well, I think there's going to be a lot of corny one-liner references to the game we're talking about today, because this game is pop culture. This game crossed over into past video games. So let's talk about the legend that is the basketball video game developed and published by Midway.
Yeah.
Originally for the arcades. This is technically, Mike, an arcade game first and foremost, but
yeah.
For me, it's like a Super Nintendo game, but that is NBA Jam. Mike,
yeah.
What do you think about when you think about this 1993, this crazy thing about 30-year-old video game?
Yeah, NBA Jam is a game that kind of revolutionized the concept of the arcade-style sports game. Now, there were arcade-style sports games before NBA Jam, Punch-Out being one, games like Double Dribble, other games like that, right? And even if you want to get into like the River City Ransom games, where there's like the super dodgeball or any of those crazy Kunio-kun sports games that they would publish in Japan that would come over here as like River City something or not at all. But there's something about NBA Jam, which is in itself is a perfect encapsulation of its time period. So NBA Jam releases in 1993. In the arcade, as you said, it's developed and published by Midway. Eventually, it would find its way to consoles in 94. On consoles, it was developed by Iguana Entertainment and published by Acclaim,
which is a Long Island
company.
Yeah, that was March of 94, and that was for Super Nintendo, Genesis, and the Game Gear.
Yeah, and the Game Gear. Eventually, they would port it to Sega CD. There would be a tournament edition version of the game that would come out even a year later. But this game releases 93, probably at the height of the popularity of the NBA. The NBA had been around for obviously a while, but the 80s into the 90s is really when the NBA started to blow up. And pretty much the 90s were so NBA centric. You had so many superstars in the NBA at this period in time. You still had, at the beginning of the 90s, you had guys like Larry Bird still playing. Magic Johnson was playing. Obviously, he'd taken some time off. But you have Michael Jordan, who pretty much revolutionized the sport and typically is considered, if not the single greatest athlete of all time, he's in the top two or three. But they were almost bigger than the sport, right? We were building superstars. The personalities of these guys, what they did on the court. And if you look at the 90s, the NBA was wild, right? I always like to joke. It's like people always care about the NBA, but I always feel like if the Knicks aren't good, it's a hard sale in the New York market. And the New York market is so big that you kind of need a good basketball team in New York. And Brooklyn Nets and the New York Knicks have kind of both been at best middling over the last couple of decades. And the Knicks seem to be turning it back and actually getting good again. But during the NBA Jam years, 1993 or 1994, the arcade-style game wasn't gone, but this game kind of brought it back to life. And this game, NBA Jam and NBA Jam Tournament Edition, completely created an entire new class of arcade style sports games. If you don't have NBA Jam, you definitely, without a doubt, do not have NFL Blitz. And now, granted, it was the same company, but you definitely don't have NFL Blitz if Jam never happens. You never have Slugfest, the baseball game Slugfest, which is incredibly arcadey, or Ken Griffey Jr. Baseball in general, right? Yep. Which is super arcadey. You never have NHL Hits, NBA Street, NFL Street. These are Ready to Rumble Boxing. Like, these are all games that kind of take their DNA, trace their DNA back to NBA Jam. Because NBA Jam wasn't about playing good technical basketball. There are games that do that. That's your NBA Live. That's your NBA 2K, as we know these games now. But back in the 90s,
they call like more of a simulation style. They call that. Where it's going for more realism.
Yeah, it's Madden versus Blitz, right? So NBA Jam was simple. It was 2-on-2 basketball. And each team had, in the first game, you had two players. And you could play as one or the other. And you could play with four players on the arcade cabinet. You could probably play with four players if you had the Super Nintendo multi-tap or whatever Genesis had. NBA Jam was simple. It was about passing. It was about hard defense. And there were no fouls, right? And it was about slam dunks. Big giant slam dunks with these giant sprites that really aren't expressive, but the things that they have the sprites do are crazy and fun. And it really captured what the kind of 1990s like slam dunk contest kind of era of basketball really was, and the entertainment value that you would get from guys like Shaquille O'Neal or Charles Barkley or Hakeem Olajuwon. These are players that Patrick Ewing, right? These are guys that that were synonymous with the 90s. And putting them in a game like this just made them so, it just was over the top. And as a kid who really followed basketball in this era, because this is when the Knicks were very, very good, it was so much fun to just go and play as any of the teams against any of your friends or against the computer. And it's a simple game. It's really, really simple. It's just pretty much back and forth, up and down the court basketball. But there's the arcadey simplicity of it, the ability to go turbo speed, right? By lighting your sneakers up, right? A certain color, and you can move really fast and hit people harder. And the ability to do the big slam dunks, or if you get 3 points in three baskets in a row, you're set on fire. So it's all of this kind of bombastic, over-the-top arcade fun that we would continue to see in other games later on, even though the game's most notable omission is that Michael Jordan's not in the game. He's not. He's plain and simple. I believe that the Bulls team is, geez, I don't even know who the second guy is. I know it's Scottie Pippen.
It's either Pippen and Rodman or Pippen and Kukoc. Oh, Rodman wasn't on the team yet. Pippen wasn't Rodman. I think he was late 90s. But it might have been Kukoc, which I think he also was late 90s. It could have been Cartwright or one of these other
those
guys.
Those guys might have been in
Armstrong.
It
might have been tournament edition, potentially.
Yeah, it might have been Armstrong and Pippen.
The thing about Shaq and Michael Jordan, as you said, it is the NBA Players Association licensed the rights to Midway. Yeah. And that was a big deal. Likenesses were not common in sports games. A lot of times you'd play a sports game and you're lucky if it just said like NHL 94 and 93. It just says you're playing as Montreal or LA or New York, but you didn't actually get players' names and jerseys and the numbers on the jerseys. You just got players that maybe had similar builds. You didn't get the names and likenesses. Yeah. As you said, this game didn't have Michael Jordan because he actually didn't license it out. He was not part of that association. He actually owned his own likeness and would charge a lot more, which was smart. A lot of players started doing that. But Mike, I gotta say, out of all the episodes we've done together and all the recordings, I think I'm most impressed right now about your NBA history, your aficionado history lesson on basketball in the 90s. I did not expect that from you, and I'm very impressed.
Yeah, so just want to let you know, I watched a lot of basketball in the 90s. I watched a lot of basketball last year as well. I've always been a fan of the NBA. It's just always been so difficult for me to watch because my team has never really been that good.
It is hard when your local team is not. And basketball is one of these sports like football where you can actually enjoy watching all-stars or superstars from other teams. But you're right. This time, an NBA Jam had a trifecta of things going on. To get a really successful game that crosses into pop culture, you can't just have one or two things go right. And one of them was basketball was bigger than ever. You had Malone and Stockton on the Jazz. Like you said, you had Pippen and the Jordan Bulls. You had Reggie Miller, Charles Barkley, Alonzo Mourning, David Robinson, Patrick Ewing. You had players that were superstars, and they were growing this league so well, and they were so recognizable.
Yeah.
Even if you didn't watch basketball often, you're watching NBC on the weekends and watching whatever big game there was. It was exciting. And the, like you said, the slam dunk contest with Dominique Wilkins and Sean Kemp, these things were really crossing over, and this hit at the perfect time. And you said it many times, the words over the top, this exaggerated but simple gameplay where you're just using two buttons to shoot, pass on defense. You hit the guy or jump to block. It's very simple, but it had a very addictive and a big learning curve to get really, really good at. I mean, it was easy to play, but really difficult to master.
Yeah, the games are short. The games are very, very short. And it's one of those things where it's, like you said, it's easy to pick up and play. And obviously this is built for an arcade, so they want the games to be over quickly and they want you to pay for the next quarter and all that stuff. So yeah, but because of that, to make it more interesting, they kind of made all the characters like superheroes, right? These characters are super strong. They like fly through the air. Most notably, like I said a little earlier, if you get three baskets in a row without the other team scoring, your character is quote unquote on fire.
Come so on, give when me your they, best impression, Mike, of that.
He's on fire. And that's the thing too. The announcer of this game was just as important as all the players, clearly based off of Marv Albert, right? It's clearly based off of that era of basketball, and Marv Albert at the time was a legendary and still is a legendary basketball commentator and known for the things that he says. And I think there's a little Walt Clyde Frazier in there too.
There definitely is. And it works with the over the top gameplay. It works to have this commentary. So when you do go on fire and then you have unlimited turbo and you're launching through the sky or shooting three pointers from anywhere, there's this energy to this game that the, like you said, the announcer kind of crosses over and generates that as well.
Yeah, no, he really, really does. And saying things like razzle dazzle, ugly shot, he's on fire, rejected, boom shakalaka.
Boom shakalaka. I think there's few things that are more identifiable than he's heating up. He's on fire.
He's on fire. Yeah.
These things are crossed into meme. You know, these crossed over into pop culture. They're things that are referenced in movies, and they became part of our everyday phrases.
I mean, if you weren't playing schoolyard basketball in 1994 or 1995, and if you were playing basketball in the schoolyard and you weren't dropping boom shakalakas and he's on fire, I don't think you were a kid of the 90s, right? I mean, we all did it all the time. We were playing NBA Jam. It was a period of time when we were playing NBA Jam. Midway was doing really well, right?
They were doing Midway Acclaim. I mean, individually, we talked about this starting as an arcade game. It actually set the record that year. It was the best-selling arcade. It's over like $1 billion in coins. This game was everywhere. And then when you did get to the console era as well, when it got to Super Nintendo and Genesis, it sold 6 million copies just on those two consoles over the first like 4 or 5 years. Like, this game crossed over what you thought a sports title could do. And thinking back on our episodes, I can't think of many other sports titles we've talked about, Mike, because it's very hard for a sports title to be more than just a yearly forgettable throw in the towel game.
Well, that's it, right? NBA Jam was like the antithesis of that because of the arcade nature of it, and it because it's openly not trying to be a simulation. It's a game that is way more memorable.
Yep.
Like, people aren't going to really split hairs between Madden 2005 and Madden 2006. I mean, you just know who's on the cover that year, whether it's...
And a lot of people skip a year or two because of that. They'll play Madden 2005 and they say, hey, you know what? I'll buy it again in 2007 or 2008 because I still play 2005 and it works fine.
Yeah, no, exactly. And a game like NBA Jam really was only around for a short period of time because NBA Jam was really big from like 1993 to like 1996. And then they eventually, I think they moved over to what was it, NBA Hangtime?
Yeah. So what happened was, and it's kind of interesting, Acclaim bought the console rights to the Jam, NBA Jam, that the specific word and phrasing. Yeah. And then Midway kind of split up and did its own thing. So you got games like NBA Hangtime, which was pretty good a couple of years later. But then you also got like an NBA Jam follow-up. I think it was on Sega Saturn. I forgot exactly what it was called.
Yeah, that's the NBA Jam Extreme game, right?
Extreme, yeah. And it wasn't very good. It had like 3D graphics. That was in 96.
Yeah, and then eventually they do stuff for Nintendo 64, Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advance. There was an NBA Jam out in 2003 on the PlayStation 2. Yep. And then we did see a revival for NBA Jam, but it was produced by EA Sports in 2010.
Yep.
And I haven't played a single NBA Jam game since NBA Jam Tournament Edition.
I think the closest thing, if you were looking for this experience, well, first off, half joking, half not, the Bugs Bunny basketball game on Super Nintendo was not bad, Mike.
All right. All right. I have never played it, but it's worth me to give it. Was it based on?
Very similar to NBA Jam. It almost feels like they ripped off this, but it was like Space Jam.
It was like Space Jam? Jordan.
Yeah. The character.
I think that's great.
A lot of fun. But I would say the best one was probably the 2K version that came out a couple of years ago, except it was very gotcha, monopolized, transaction heavy.
See, that's a problem. I hate that.
Yeah.
I hate that. And
but the gameplay felt like NBA Jam. They did a really good job in that respect.
Well, that's really good. I really like the NBA Street games. Those games are really good too. Street 2.
And those were made by
were those EA? Did EA make NBA Street? I feel like they might have.
Was there a version of it where Mario was in it at one point?
That was, I think, NBA Street Volume 2 or Volume 3, where they put them in there. And then Squaresoft or Square Enix worked with Nintendo to make
that was
Mario Hoops.
Right.
Mario Hoops 3-on-3.
Yeah, EA Sports, which is EA Canada. Yeah,
EA Sports. It's the company that gave us SSX.
Yep, exactly. So they did make, I'm surprised those never came back, because I feel like those games were all pretty successful in their own right. People have nostalgia for the NBA Street games. There was a whole street culture to it, which was cool in the games.
Which was really, really cool. And they were fun, fun games to play. But like, yeah, if you look at it now, it's like, I don't even know if there's an arcade basketball game really anymore. There's probably some mobile nonsense.
And what's funny is NBA Live, which is more simulation, they kind of gave up a few years ago. It's really just like 2K's game, and they kind of own basketball these days.
I mean, Madden owns football, right? What happened.
A lot of them with the baseball series, the show had the exclusive MLB rights for a while. And then EA had the exclusive rights, and these companies feel threatened. So they just throw money at the NBA or NHL and MLB. And it makes sense for them to take the offer, because they're saying, here's like $500 million, whatever crazy number it probably is. It's like, please let us be the only ones to use the likenesses, and it kind of, it's a win-win, except for us, except for the players, I feel like.
Yeah. I mean, exclusives really just ultimately are anti-consumer.
Correct.
But we're seeing that now, right? We're actually seeing the failure of console exclusives and how console exclusives actually ultimately kind of hurt the games.
And so in sports, because I feel like there's no drive to innovate then.
No.
I feel like if you're a diehard Madden and 2K fan, you're probably buying them, but for the general public, they're not doing anything special and unique because they're not driven to it because there's no competition.
Like FIFA is probably the most played sports game on the planet. And players are always complaining about how it just doesn't do anything, how it's just the same game year over year. And that's the problem with annualized stuff. They could probably, honestly, it's probably the time, and it's probably the right time for sports games. And I know this sounds terrible for me to say it, but it's probably the time for sports games to go full games of service, where you have an account with Madden.
You pay $10-$15 a month. They update your rosters, update the game. Yep. You're right.
Yep. It's probably the best usage of games as service, where like every year your roster updates, and maybe you don't pay $10 a month. Maybe you pay $5 a month. Maybe you pay $6 a month. So at like the end of the year, you've paid $60 or $70 and you get a new roster. Or at the top of the year, every year you pay another $50 to unlock the season pass or something like that.
I actually think that's really smart, and I'm surprised no one's done it yet. Cause I think if they did the math, they might even be able to make more money than they are now per game.
Because most likely. I mean, it's hard. At least a game like Call of Duty, which is usually the best-selling game of the year, right? It was the best-selling game of 2022. I think it made like $1 billion in 10 days or 7 days or something like that. Call of Duty at least does something different every year. I mean, granted, yeah, now that what they're going, they're making Modern Warfare 3 now. Is that the next one? Matt, you sent me that link with a laugh.
Well, every once in a while, they have to go back to the well and hear what the fans are cheering for. And
yeah,
it's not like they've overdone it. It's the third Modern Warfare. It's not like there's 10 of them or 15 of them.
Yeah, I mean, you got to relive, what is that, 2007?
Yep.
It's 2007, it's just
we're getting constant. Close to 20 years. It's wild.
Yeah, I think
Modern Warfare
stuff.
2 was, I'm trying to think what year Modern Warfare 2 came out.
Like that, 10 yeah. years ago?
Yeah, it's got to be. So
yeah.
I think that's fair. But Mike, I don't see the games like The Bigs. I don't know if you remember a game called The Bigs. It was a baseball game that came out in the 360 era. And there were two of them, Bigs 1 and 2. And me and my friends had so much fun because you saw players like, I'm going to say Derek Jeter and Alex Rodriguez, because those were the Yankees at the time. But they were these big hulking guys with big arms. And everything was either a home run or a catch where the guy in the outfield jumps over the wall to catch it. And there was something that was very NBA Jam about that.
Yeah.
You just don't find in video games these days. And we don't even have that option.
No. And you know what? It's good for people that don't quite understand sports. Like,
it's a good gateway.
It's a great gateway. It's like when you go back or don't understand the sport to that degree, when you go back and play something like NFL Blitz, right? I know what a Hail Mary is, right? I mean, I know football plays and all that stuff too, but like most people know what a Hail Mary is. Right. Most people know what some of these really simple plays are. Basketball. We know how to play defense. We know how to pass. We know how to shoot. Right. NBA Jam. It's three things. You do three things and you could dunk. By the time you get to NBA Jam Tournament Edition, they throw all those little bonuses out there where you have little spots in the ground that are
hot
worth
spots,
like hot spots that are worth like 8 points. You get the super dunks, which were fun. I don't know if you can in the original NBA Jam, but I know in NBA Jam Tournament Edition, you can actually break the backboard. You can shatter it. You can shatter the backboard by dunking too much. And it's just it's a really fun, silly game. And it kind of opens up a gateway for a lot of these style, arcade style sports games. NBA Jam at face value is a very simple, really, I don't want to use the word shallow because I don't think it's shallow, but it's really simple. It's a really simple game.
It's not overly ambitious. And when we look at video games, we look at games that really go above and beyond trying to do something that no one's ever seen before. This just takes a very different approach to what you're getting in a video game. And I applaud it for that. And I think when they first approached the NBA and approached developers for this game and Midway approached how they would go about this game, there were conversations about different things and different camera angles and replays and all this different intricate stuff. And at the end of the day, they stripped it down and said, this game works better, simple as just a fixed camera. You go back and forth quickly. You can jump, you can shoot, you can knock someone down. There's no free throws. There's no fouls. It plays action. It plays fast. And like you said, that inspired things like probably Wayne Gretzky hockey, NHL hits, and all the other modern street games and games like it. And this was really, like you said, was it the first that did anything arcade style in games? But it feels like the first significant one that truly broke through. This game generated more money that year it came out than Jurassic Park, that made upwards of $300 million that year. This game generated more money than the biggest hit in the movie theaters.
Yeah, I mean, because gaming has always just made money. It's made money. It's always been a moneymaker. I know how people like to talk about, well, gaming's more popular and now than it ever has been, and it is, but at the same time, video gaming has pretty much always made money, except for maybe a couple of years where it was a slowdown, but still, it was still a gigantic industry even 30 years ago or 40 years ago. So it makes perfect sense that an accessible basketball game, like dads who don't play video games will sit down and play NBA Jam with their kids because maybe they watch basketball. Same thing with Madden. They'll sit down and they'll play a game of Blitz or Madden because they understand. It's like, oh, okay, I can play a game as the Jets or whatever. So when this game comes out, it's the coolest thing to talk about, right? Mm-hmm. Midway is crushing the early mid 90s, right? Because that's what we're in, right? It's the early mid 90s. With games like NBA Jam, obviously, but then Mortal Kombat, right? Yeah. So when 1993 I was 7 years old. I was in second and third grade when these games came out. We would go to our friends' houses. We would pretty much switch back and forth between NBA Jam and Mortal Kombat 1 and 2, and eventually Mortal Kombat 3 in 1995 and NBA Jam Tournament Edition in 1995. So it was just what you did. You played this. Maybe you snuck a little Doom in there if you had a PlayStation. But NBA Jam is kind of, it's funny when you sent me the text like, hey, should we cover NBA Jam? I was like, absolutely. It wasn't even a game I'd ever think about. But it probably is single-handedly the best arcade sports game ever made.
Yeah, I don't think
I'm excluding arcade wrestlers from that, but yeah,
I think so. I struggle to even find who would be number two if there's somebody even threatening what would be the next sports arcade style that gets up there. You've said Blitz, which is great Blitz. In its own right, but I don't think it ever made the cultural impact that NBA Jam did.
Yeah, you know, I would definitely say if we were to sit down and actually have a conversation about that, if we took racing out of the question.
If you take racing and golf and wrestling out, which are all considered sports, and I'm not discrediting those as not important things, but the traditional we think of is hockey, basketball, football, soccer, this has got to be at the top.
It's definitely at the top. NFL Blitz is definitely at the top. If we don't have racing, we don't have Daytona USA, which is at the top. Punch-Out.
Yeah.
Punch-Out I put towards the top. But after that, it gets a little tough if you're...
You get into the weeds then a bit.
Mario Strikers.
Yeah, no, Mario, listen, he's done a good job with some of his sports games.
Mario sports games are Mario. I mean, listen, if we're including racing, the best arcade sports game of all time is Mario Kart 8. But if we're not including racing, it's NBA Jam.
Yeah, no, I think it has to be. And something we've actually skipped over, and it's laughable to think about now, but there were a lot of hidden characters and hidden...
Oh, I was going to get to that.
A lot of hidden codes in this game, Mike. And we've talked about games that have significant codes. Doom is one of them that you type in codes, you could do certain things. This game in particular, you type in codes, you can get, I believe, big head mode. You can do different things in game. But I think it's notably the unlockable secret characters absolutely bananas, especially in Tournament Edition where it gets the chain comes loose.
It's crazy. The characters, well, I think they put all the developers in the game.
A lot
right?
of the developers are in there, and there's a lot that actually didn't even make the cutting room, that they didn't make the cutting room floor because they had Mortal Kombat characters. They said that they were in testing versions that they cut.
Oh, that would have been so cool. Imagine.
That would have been so cool to see Scorpion.
Scorpion and Sub-Zero. That would have been rad.
Reptile. Yeah. They had that in there. But I mean, we are left with the current president at that time, which was Bill Clinton.
Yo, Bill, you could play as Bill Clinton and Al Gore, man. That's pretty great.
First Lady Hillary Clinton. I mean,
did they put Warren Moon? Was Warren Moon a character you could play as?
I'm pretty sure Warren Moon was in. They had mascots from the NBA teams.
Yeah.
So you're jumping around as these crazy looking costumes characters.
I think you could play as Bill Clinton and George Clinton from Parliament Funkadelic.
It's so absolutely bananas that because we've gotten hidden characters in video games, but I feel like this game, most notably, just about as much as any game out there, was most synonymous with its crazy secret characters.
Yeah, no, this was the best. This is the so good. I mean, I'm looking at the pictures now of them. Yeah, and it's crazy.
I feel like the newer Mortal Kombat games have done a good job with some of its crazy crossovers.
Yeah.
But I feel like this is just more ridiculous because of you have to remember the credit for what time it was, what year it was.
This is the beginning.
Yeah.
This is the beginning of when this happened, right? This is like the beginning of stupid guest characters. I think in Tournament Edition, you can play as like Benny the Bull. It's like more of the mascots. Yes, you can play as the Hornet. And I also think that was maybe on the home version. Yeah. Of the games too, you could play
as
like
characters had newer rosters. So famously, the arcade version had 92, 93 rosters, while the console got a more updated 93, 94. So I think at that time there were more unlockables. But to me, Mike, there's no rational reason why Bill Clinton should be in an NBA basketball game.
Yeah, but can he dunk? And that's all that matters in life, right? I just want to let everyone know this for those of you who don't understand this part of sports or this kind of question to ask of someone's skills at anything. You could be the best at anything, but there's going to be a point in time where someone asks you, yeah, but can you dunk? And if you can't dunk, you can't dunk. And that's just how it goes. Matt knows what I'm talking about.
It totally is a thing. Well, can you dunk or not?
Can you dunk? And if someone says to you, hey, listen, this guy's so good at this, blah, blah, blah. And you go, well, can he dunk? That's it.
Out the window. Really, there's not much more to it than that.
Muggsy Bogues can dunk.
Now, Mike, I want to ask you another question. I don't know if it's something you have hands-on experience or just knowledge of. The console versions of this game, I think, were a little bit different from game to game. I remember specifically playing it on the Super Nintendo because that's what I had and that's what I owned. I remember famously the Sega, I don't know if it was a Sega Saturn or Sega CD version, had a lot of loading. Like, oh, it was the CD not version. A good version of the game.
Definitely.
Because all the quarters, in between quarters, which this game moves fast, like you said. Do you remember the different versions and issues?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the Sega version is definitely... It's Sega voices are never good. So the Genesis versions definitely had bad voices. The Sega CD version absolutely had more of probably definitely had better music. Like it had CD quality audio or whatever, Redbook audio, whatever the heck they were using at the time. But there was definitely loading. There was definitely a lot of loading. The PlayStation version of the game also probably had a lot of loading, but also probably had better music. And same thing with the Saturn version. So like anything else, any game that you play like that, you're playing the Saturn version, the Sega CD version, you're going to deal with some terrible loading.
But some better audio along the way.
But you're going to get better audio and better voices. The Super Nintendo...
The Game Boy version, I remember being pretty awful. I never had hands on with the Game Gear. I'm not sure about that one.
It was probably bad.
Yeah.
It was probably bad.
I would probably think so. They probably had to make some shortcuts.
Yeah.
But I think if I was going to find one thing from... a basketball fan at the time. I collected the cards. I had some of the figurines. I think the thing that impressed me most is there were actually some like RPG elements to this game, Mike, that the players themselves had like green to red numbered stats. Yeah,
that's stats.
So the players had better like blocking, rebounding, shooting, and you actually felt it in game. Like who you chose and who you played as actually mattered.
Listen, you and I both know that Reggie Miller was going to drop so many three-pointers. They should have also given him a bump when he plays the Knicks.
Right?
Because, oh, I hate Reggie Miller so much.
Oh, you have to. If you're a Knicks fan.
I hate that man.
I respect him now, but as a child growing up in the 90s, in the early 90s, there were certain players that you hated, and you hated the Miami Heat, the Indiana Pacers.
I'll tell you this much. I hated the Pacers more than I hated the Rockets or the Bulls.
Yes, you're right. I felt like those teams were maybe actually better than us, but the Heat and the Pacers had no reason and no business beating us, and they were always dogfights.
Listen, okay? We have to have a conversation. Jordan was out for two years.
He was busy playing baseball and golf and whatnot.
He was out for 2 years, right? He was out
93, 95, yeah.
93, 94, right? Correct. And 94, 95.
Yep.
I believe the Knicks got to the championships in 1994.
Yep, 93, 94.
That was the Rockets. Got to the champion and listen, nobody was beating Hakeem the Dream. They didn't need anyone else on that team and they were going to get smacked.
I wonder if the Bulls actually win if Jordan plays that year. I say no, actually.
I don't think Michael Jordan ever lost the championship.
I know, but they would have been burnt out. It'd have been their fourth year in a row.
I don't know,
Hakeem,
dude.
The Dream was really good.
Hakeem was ridiculous. Like he had other players in the team that were also good, but like Hakeem was so good. He made Patrick Ewing look terrible. But that's not the year that breaks my heart. The year that breaks my heart is the next year when they lose to the Indiana Pacers. And I hate to say this.
Was it the Charles Smith or was that the Patrick Ewing? Which one was
Patrick
that?
Patrick Ewing. You got to dunk.
Yeah.
You got to dunk the ball.
There was another year that Charles Smith
famously
missed the tap in. But yeah, Patrick Ewing goes for that soft touch and he should have just dunked it.
Goes for the finger roll. Guy 7 feet tall. Dunk the ball.
And my guy, John Starks, missed a lot of shots against the Rockets in the finals. Choke. So there's a lot of things that did not go our way as Knicks fans. And we look at it as the glory years, but we had so much failure.
2000 was good.
Yes, that was a very good year.
It's funny because obviously, like, listen,
Alan,
this wouldn't.
Houston Sprewell.
Latrell Sprewell, Patrick Ewing. Latrell Sprewell, what a character. He was it PJ Carlissimo that he got into the fight with?
Choked. Yeah, very good, Mike. I'm impressed.
He left practice And they came back and choked him again.
That was kind of normal for like 90s, 2000 basketball.
Listen, I love it, dude. It's great. It's like when Ron Artest goes into the fans, goes into the stands and fights people. That's New York though, baby.
Well, my favorite still at Allen Iverson is at the like press conference, and he was famously for like changing the culture of basketball.
Yeah, of course.
They're like, you missed practice the other day. And he's like, practice? You talk to me about practice? And it's like, he was too big for the sport at the time. Like the players, it was just awesome. But
you know, I didn't mean to turn this into basketball podcast.
That's what happens with this NBA Jam. We went deep into the culture of basketball, but that's what was kind of cool about the time is that we loved the game. And this game was such a fun reflection of basketball at that time.
It's just at this point in time, it's such a good basketball, such a good in your face game. And it was so
like
special.
NFL, it was all about the Cowboys and the 49ers. And I feel like football had kind of taken a step back at that time.
Yeah. Football comes back kind of.
It comes back.
Early 2000s.
You get the Peyton Mannings, you get the Brady start, and football starts to grow again when these guys are rookies.
Yeah, football starts to grow when the NFL starts to grow in popularity
and the growth of
again.
Madden, actually.
Madden for sure.
Yeah.
Madden for sure. Right around Madden 2000, jump to the PlayStation, PlayStation 2.
Big deal.
Big deal. And that pushed the NFL, I think, further. But I think also when the league became more of a quarterback centric league.
Yes. It wasn't about the running backs anymore when the Barry Sanders and those guys.
Yeah, Emmitt Smith and whatnot. Yeah.
Yep. But you're right. But this sport, basketball, was huge. You started with saying went from Bird and Magic to Jordan, and the sport never looked back. And it really it's taken a couple steps back, but it took over. LeBron came and Kobe and NBA has kind of awful, but the sport has really never been better, and the superstars have kind of never really left. And it's gone small lulls, but NBA Jam kind of was that perfect time.
Yeah.
Transitioning to those Jordan and New York and the Jazz and all these teams that all thought they had a chance to win.
They were all so good. And it's the culture of the period. It's the arcade. The arcade has really become like a thing. The arcade at this point is
the 90s
is like
attitude. You had some of that 90s spunk in there.
You have like you're just about 10 or 15 years old with the arcade and close to actually, if we're talking about full arcade, but heyday of the arcade is like in its like second wind, right? We're talking about this early mid 90s period for the arcade, Street Fighter 2. Right? NBA Jam, Mortal Kombat. This is like I'm going to use comic book terminology here. This is like the silver age of the arcade. If the golden age of the arcade is Pac-Man, Donkey Kong, Pong, Mario Brothers, Defender, Space Invaders, all that stuff. If that's the golden age, and it is, that is the golden age of the arcade. We're talking Street Fighter 2, NBA Jam, Mortal Kombat.
Is this before like the Turtles and X-Men?
Turtles is 89. Turtles, the first Turtles game is 89. So yeah, I would consider that kind of the beginning. I think X-Men is 93 or 92. Yeah. So this is all The Simpsons, Final Fight. These are all we're in like the silver age of the arcade, and the basketball's blown up because Michael Jordan's the biggest celebrity on the planet, athlete or otherwise. And it's the starter jackets, right?
Yeah.
It's the Nikes.
They bought me like Charlotte Hornet jackets because those jackets were a big deal.
How could you not have a Charlotte Hornet jacket?
Like they had
Larry
LJ.
Johnson.
Yep, big
Larry Johnson. Grandmama. He had Alfonso Mourning. Yep. Come on, dude. You couldn't mess with that. Jeff Van Gundy lashed himself to his leg.
I know. Poor Jeff Van Gundy. That little man, that little bald, no reason why he didn't have hair like Mike. He had so much stress going on the basketball court with seven.
He was a pretty good coach.
He was in his great commentator too.
And they got rid of him. They fired him.
They just fired him a few weeks ago. It's very sad. But Mike, this game, like you said, this was the golden era, the silver era, I'd say, with the bringing it back, the silver age of arcades.
So if the golden age of comic books is Captain America and Superman and Batman.
The 40s, the 50s.
Yeah, the silver age of comic books is Spider-Man, 60s, The Flash, the X-Men. So like as the arcade, this is kind of like a silver age of the arcade.
Yeah, this game was the highest grossing arcade game of 1993. The machines were earning $2,400 a week, setting an all-time record for highest per unit arcade earnings in the United States.
Wow.
It's really wild to think that it grossed over $1 billion worldwide in its first 12 months.
Incredible.
And there's over 20,000 arcade units out there. So you're talking about this was everywhere.
We have it at LI Retro for sure.
And it's an awesome arcade one up. It's actually got one of the online stuff. So you can actually get like the 3/4 size, I think that is, of a full size arcade. Pretty cool.
You know what, man? The arcade one up machines are pretty good.
It's a great way to honor. Yeah. It's a great way to honor. Not everyone has $3,000 to go out and buy a refurbished or a classic arcade. So it's a great way to get people into it. So,
I mean, I have one. I love it.
Yeah. They're really great. And I don't know where you'd put this as far as like top SNES games, but it definitely cracks a list. I mean, if you're talking top arcade games and impactful for this genre, if you're talking sports games on the Super Nintendo or Genesis, it's got to be in the top 3 to 5.
Definitely in terms of sports games, for sure. For comparing this to whatever Madden 94, well, NHL, what is it?
NHL 94 was the big one. Yeah. It was a big deal.
That game rules. And I don't even like hockey. I don't even know hockey well, but NHL 94 rules.
It kind of did what this game did, and that it was very simple, just, you know, bashing people and just shooting and making it fun and action-y.
Yeah, I mean, I played a lot of Blades of Steel, but
of Steel, but that's back in the NES.
Yeah. So, but this game rules. NBA Jam is a great arcade game. It fits in every arcade, any arcade. It's great in any bar, even with just the old players. Like,
it got amazing reviews on the arcade and on Electronic Gaming Monthly, giving this game a 9 out of 10. The Super Nintendo. This game reviewed well. It's considered one of the most impactful video games of the generation. Yeah.
I believe it. I fully believe it.
So when I first brought this up to Mike, I actually questioned it too. I was like, can we put this in the Hall of Fame? And then I thought back. I said, absolutely. Yeah. I said, this
like,
game.
Yeah.
It did so many things well. And we talk commercial success, and that doesn't always be the measuring stick to making our Hall of Fame, but it had everything. It had cultural impact.
Yeah.
It had replayability. It had popularity. It was a good game in itself, simple, but great. And then it had the commercial success. We put it all together. This game deserves it more than probably some games we've already talked about.
I agree. It's definitely a really special game. We're not going to talk about too many sports games on this show because, like you said, it's hard to narrow them down, but this is definitely one that needs to be talked about.
Agreed. Very much agreed. And it was a fun conversation to relive some of those special moments in gaming and special moments in basketball. So it's a cool conversation. And we thank NBA Jam and then the updated NBA Jam Tournament Edition for being so impactful and joins the ranks in our Hall of Fame, Mike.
Listen, man, I'm just going to paint a picture for you right now. It's 1994, maybe 1995. It's Friday night. You've just ordered a pizza. We're in New York. You got Friday night Knicks are on. They're usually on around 7:30. Game's going to wrap by like 9:30. And then you can go play NBA Jam for a few hours and relive the game. And pizza was eaten sometime in there. Maybe you had it with a Coke. And it was a really good time to be a kid. It really was. So
it is important to mention the pizza and snacks of it all, because this was definitely one of those games.
This is one of the go-to pizza and snacks game. Like, this is when people give Nintendo a hard time for focusing on couch multiplayer, I will often point to games like NBA Jam to just show you the importance of how good that is. Playing online is great, but there are few days gaming that are more fun than when, if you're lucky enough, you can have a room full of people playing the same game.
What I think is also unique about this game is you could play competitively, but you also have the opportunity to play it cooperatively. And that's not an experience you can always have in any video game. Yeah. You could play on the same team.
Yeah, exactly. Precisely.
But I love that part of it. The couch co-op, the multiplayer aspect of it, that adds a whole other dynamic to snacking, eating, and having some fun.
Got to. I mean, listen, dude, I've been in a room with eight people playing NBA Jam. And I've been in a room with probably 10 or 12 people playing Super Smash Brothers. And there's something about it. It's hard to replicate.
It is. And as much as I love Tears of the Kingdom or name your other God of War, name your first person shooter that you play on your own story mode. But a game like this, that communal, that social, that in your face, he's on fire type experience.
He's on fire.
Very hard to replicate. So Thank you, Mike, as always, for reminiscing on another great video game. Where can people out there, if they're on this thing called the internet, where could they find you?
Sure, you can find me here on the Hall of Fame Video Game Podcasts. You can also find me with my other podcast, Batmantasticast. You can search us out. We're covering Batman. You can find me with my band, Bad Mary. We have a gigantic show on September 3rd on Long Island at the Amityville Music Hall. This is probably our biggest show, one of our biggest shows of the year. I'm not going to jinx myself and say that I'm not going to get a good show after this. But as of right now, this is our biggest show of the year. It's one of the most, probably one of our most important shows ever. So I'll probably be talking about that and posting about that on social media quite a bit. You can find us at Bad Mary and all over the internet, Bad Mary Band, and at badmary.com. And you can also find me with Long Island Retro Gaming. The expo has ended, but we've already begun our preparations for next year. And you can search out LI Retro, all social media. They're an incredibly fantastic group of human beings, and you should support them.
I really have to say, and we talk about it leading up to each year, and this just passed as we're recording this. It was just this past previous weekend, the Long Island Retro Gaming event, and it's spectacular. If you're anywhere outside of the New York, Long Island area, even if you're a couple hours away, this is something, if you're even just a middling gaming fan, you're listening to this, it's an experience. It's so much fun. I mean, the amount of content there to play, the amount of tech and hardware that you might never see anywhere else again, the uniqueness to it, it really is special. And I commend Mike and crew that put all this together. And I only made it to one of the 3 days, and I spent a good 5-6 hours there, and I felt like I barely scratched the surface amongst all the cool stuff that's there. So it is now a year away as we're recording this, but I understand why it takes them so long to plan and why you should put it on your calendar already for next year once they announce it.
Yeah. And if you follow the group too, there are other events that we do throughout the year, and there's podcasts and there's videos and there's all that stuff. Just as a taste of what we had this year, we opened up a Pokemon. We call it the Pokelab this year, which was kind of like the best kept secret of the expo this year, where one of our folks was giving out old rare event Pokemon that you can't really get anymore for old games if you have old games. But the vendor room is always filled with the most unique and cool stuff. And we've had some crazy items like the Divers 2000 Dreamcast TV, or the SF1, the Sharp SF1 Super Famicom TV, or the 3DO M2, which was something that was never even released. And we had not one, but two Panasonic Qs on display.
You had to throw that in. I keep looking on eBay. And if you want to buy one just for parts, I mean, it's not functional. The tray doesn't work. It's going to run you close to $900 for just, and they have dozens of those on eBay. They're not functional. If you want a good one intact, you're going to spend close to $1,200. And that's not new and sealed.
No, and one of us has it with, I think, the Game Boy Player attachment too.
Oh boy, yeah. It's so pretty. For anyone, we brought it up a couple times on the podcast here. If you Google search the Panasonic Q, it is really one of the most beautiful pieces of hardware. And I'm surprised that Nintendo even went this way with their GameCube and allowed this, because it's so different from their approach to everything, where it looks like this just beautiful piece of it looks like a receiver or a beautiful piece of technology.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's the best. I love it. So,
I mean, it just plays GameCube games and DVDs, and it doesn't even play them natively in the States unless you get some boot disk or conversion, but it's still that cool.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely unbelievable.
I could just buy a regular GameCube for $100, but it's not the same thing, Mike.
It's not the same thing. It's right, totally different.
Guys, that is it. That is our episode for this week. You know where to find us. You know where to leave us a review. Please do it. And please tune in next time as we are switching to this bi-weekly schedule. We hope you can tune in more often, since we're not hitting your airwaves every week. It'll be every other. So please do not miss an episode.
Thanks, everyone. Have a good one.
See you guys. Total. Bye.
Bye-bye.
From Mike and Matt, thank you for listening to the Hall of Fame Game Podcast. Check us out on Instagram at Hall of Fame Pod, or email us at thehalloffamepod@gmail.com. Please leave us a review and be sure to tune in next time.